Barrett Salee, not only a contributor to CBSSports.com, but also he's a co-host on ESPNU on Sirius XM Radio. Barrett, we appreciate you. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Johnny.
You know, I was exchanging some text messages with you earlier, and I've been pretty outspoken about what has transpired at Michigan State. And, you know, it's pretty sad, or maybe it's you can look at it as the glass half full. Maybe it's encouraging knowing that the future leaders of our country are the only ones acting like adults there on the campus of Michigan State. The Board of Trustees is a joke. The fact that the person that they named the former governor of Michigan as their interim, president, a joke. And the fact that Mark D'Antonio is a complete liar. Maybe it doesn't impact them recruiting wise this year as far as football, though too bad it should if no one has signed on the dotted line. But I just don't understand in 2018, we've got another Penn State Baylor situation.
No, we do. And, I think systemic, and it goes all the way through the athletic department and obviously outside of the athletic department, which is the most concerning thing, that you have an institution that clearly had issues. And really people knew about those issues. People in power knew about those issues and did nothing about it. You know, even if it's, you can't prevent people from sexually assaulting people.
Right.
Like that's going to happen, but you can properly put in safeguards and ways to punish those who do. And to have this sort of be an ongoing thing since 2010, that the highest of higher ups not only knew about, but were told was a problem, and to have nothing done really is appalling. And it goes from the athletics department through the coaching staff, through the university police department, through the NCAA, everybody's affected. So, there are ways that this should be dealt with, and it's almost like at every turn, Michigan State did the exact opposite of what should have been done.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Remember what we were talking about during the fall? We were talking about the issues where the FBI gets involved, and finally, what was a joke for decades as far as from an AAU standpoint, the recruiting with the big shoe companies, everybody was quite aware of it. In fact, I knew all that stuff was going on back in the 80s and 90s. And it took somebody like the FBI getting involved for them finally to help the NCAA enforce some of these things. Maybe it's one of these situations where the government just needs to get involved. And I know that first thinking is, no, the governments are involved in enough things. We don't need that. But I just don't think these universities are going to police themselves. I don't think the conferences are going to police these universities. And I don't think the NCAA, just because of the backlash they received from Penn State, they're not fully engaged either.
No, I'm with you. I mean, you have mechanisms and organizations in place that should allow policing yourself to be accomplished. And yet almost, in every one of these situations, those systems fail you. Because I think we'll be kidding ourselves if we think that the same thing is happening at other places or isn't happening at other places. Of course it's happening at other places. Michigan State's not alone in this. Baylor's not alone in this. That is unfortunately reality, and if the structure that's in place continually fails, then you need to change the structure. And whether that be beefing up, independent police forces outside of the university's purview, letting local jurisdictions and campuses have more say, or whatever, I don't know. But it's pretty appalling that in basically every instance in this Michigan State story, the athletics department had basically the first chance to decide whether the instance was real or alleged and punish accordingly. That the athletics department should be the last to A, find out, and B, punish.
Well, and here's the thing, just watching or looking at the release earlier today from the Southeastern Conference, talking about the revenue sharing of the 2016-17 fiscal year, which just ended at the end of August of last season, $596.9 million distributed to the 14 teams. That averages just under $41 million per school. So there's enough money out there if they really wanted to stop these issues. And that's just the SEC, by the way. There's enough money out there. If they wanted to put a stop to it, they could.
Oh, sure. There's no doubt they could. They've got the money. A complete side note is I think those numbers are actually a little concerning, because that's only $500,000 more in revenue roughly than last year. And that is a stark departure from basically exponential growth the SEC had from a revenue distribution standpoint, in the middle of this decade. So I think that's a little bit deceptive because, you know, yeah, it's a lot of money, but it's also, I think, a sign that you've also got market stabilization instead of market growth, which is a huge change for the SEC. But you're right, they've got the money still. It's still a huge sum of money that could be going and should be going to protect students and faculty and make sure that everybody's doing the right thing in all aspects of athletics and education, and it's not.
Has your the way you look at Mark D'Antonio today compared to, I don't know, 4 months ago, has it changed the way you look at him now?
Yeah, because he outright lied in his press conference on Friday. Throw everything else out, not to say discount it, but a lot of this stuff is alleged, and we don't know if all of these allegations are true or not. And I find it hard to believe that all of them would be just allegations and not founded in any truth,
right?
Which is, you know, basically the way it was presented. So, but he said in his press conference Friday that he had never dealt with issues like this in the past, before last summer, when obviously they had, you know, four players arrested, which is just not true. Like, it's just factually inaccurate. So to say that, I mean, I liked Mark D'Antonio. I thought he was a good guy. I still think he's a very good football coach. But, yeah, my opinion on him has changed quite a bit.
And these are times and opportunities that, you know, we can do whatever we can. You know, we don't have to be quiet. We don't have to be quiet on the air. We don't have to be quiet with our fingers on Twitter and all that. And I don't have a problem, you know, to throw it out there because, to me, I go back to the whole Ray Rice situation with the NFL. That was a story that was going away. At least the NFL wanted it to go away. But there were enough members of the media that would not allow that story to die. Kept it up. I mean, and then finally we get the video that's released, and then everybody starts looking at domestic violence entirely differently as far as the NFL, a league that for decades ignored issues like that. As long as somebody could help you win games, they didn't care what you did when you were away from the facilities as far as your wife, girlfriend, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, and that's I think, it's obviously concerning in the NFL, but it's, I think it's even more concerning in college because, I mean, let's take away everything else, the football aspect, the educational aspect. The purpose of college is to shape young people into grown-ups, right?
Right.
That's the purpose of college. Prepare you for career, prepare you athletically, mentally, physically, whatever. And if you go to college and they teach you that that's okay, or turning a blind eye to something like this is okay, or even if you just see it and you just sort of, you know, get that into your system by osmosis, that's still failing. Like, that's still horribly impactful to young people, impressionable minds. And, you know, it's one thing to have it done, like you said, the Ray Rice situation at the NFL level, but, like, the mission of college is to prepare people for their futures. And if they see that as okay, or they see it as at least accepted, they're more likely to think that it's accepted in the future.
Well, and I'm tougher on this because here's the thing. When I hear a coach at California U, you know, talk about second chances or whatever, here's the thing. You've seen the videos that are out there on YouTube, Twitter, whatever the case may be, of other student athletes that have done, you know, these types of, you know, made these kind of decisions where it's not a mistake, it's a decision, a very wrong one. That's your first chance right there. That is your second chance. You don't get another chance based on the fact that, well, I haven't hit anybody until now, so why? Where's my second chance? And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, have you ever read a story of a third string kicker or eighth string linebacker that's not going to see the light of day as far as a playing field or a basketball court or whatever, given a second or third chance? No.
Not really.
No. The whole point is, if they can't help contribute to W's, these coaches could care less about second or third chances.
Well, yeah, I'm personally all for second chances, provided that you've learned your lesson and been taught the proper lesson, right? So, like, you know, if you just get suspended for a game for hitting a woman, you're not learning your lesson. You don't deserve a second chance at that point. But if you get kicked off the team, like Zach Mettenberger is a perfect example. Zach Mettenberger got kicked off of Georgia, had to go to junior college, has an arrest record, went through basically 2 years of misery, did a bunch of charitable work, got back with LSU, and was a starter. He served a punishment and became a better man for it, so he deserved a second chance, and that's fine. Michael Vick, same thing. He went to prison, federal prison, came back, fixed his life, and he earned a second chance, and he's succeeding in a second chance, which is fine. But in order to say appropriately, players deserve second chances, or people that make mistakes deserve second chances, they have to serve punishment. Like, you have to learn your lesson and prove that you're worthy of being a second chance. And you don't prove your worth of getting a second chance simply by being good at football, at accounting, at architecture, or whatever. You have to go through the proper courses to earn it back, and sometimes these guys just don't get it.
Bears Lee joining us again. The transfer rule, you know, before the summer gets here, you know, is something that, you know, of course, the Big 12 is talking about it. There's going to be some, you know, tweaks, obviously, to it before it gets to the point where maybe the you know, Division I will vote on something along those lines. You know, where do you feel and where do you lie right now as far as your thought process with, you know, student athletes being able to transfer without any punishment?
I'm skeptical, and it's not because I don't like the theory. I do. I do think that players should have a little bit more flexibility in terms of their careers, especially if a coach leaves. But that rule proposal, which is a proposal, not the proposal, states that they can't follow their head coach, but could follow assistant coaches, you know, if a coach gets fired. And that, I think, it makes it super sketchy, because those are the guys who actually have more of a relationship with the players anyway.
Right.
And those are also the guys who jump several times in some cases in the offseason. So, for example, let's just say an Arkansas player wanted to follow Dan Enos after Brett Bielema got fired, follow Dan Enos to Michigan. Okay, well, he enrolls in Michigan. Well, what happened last week? Dan Enos got the Alabama job. Is that player stuck in Michigan? Because that doesn't seem fair. And it certainly doesn't seem fair that an assistant coach can sit here and say to a program that he's interviewing with, hey, if you hire me, I'm going to bring X, Y, and Z players from my old roster. And then those players on the current roster have to be – some of them have to be moved out. So how do you revoke their scholarships? Because they've got four-year scholarships too. So I the idea of giving players more flexibility, I just don't know if that's the right course of action.
Bears Lee joining us again. We're a week away from national – actually 6 days away from National Signing Day next Wednesday, February 7th. One of the concerns before all this transpired, as far as with the early period in December, I was concerned how it would impact individuals who were not the most sought after. You know, reading things that are out there, I get the impression, because the schools aren't so focused on the top prospects, since most, you know, 70%, whatever that number is, has already committed or signed, it gives these individuals a second, third, fourth looks from some of these schools. And in so many ways, maybe those opportunities have increased for these individuals.
Yeah, I think I wrote about one of them today, Brevin White, who's a Princeton commit, who is now Alabama's top priority at quarterback. Alabama needs a quarterback. So, and he's a four-star player. He's a good player. Wants to work on Wall Street, wants to be an investment banker, committed to Princeton last offseason. And now he's Alabama's top target. So, yeah, I think it, in some cases it has. I think in really made schools a little bit more judicious in terms of how they, you know, offer lower-tier players on their board because they don't know how the chips are going to fall either. So I think what's happened is the best players and the top-tier, they get offers way earlier in the process.
Right.
But the lower-tier players get them much later. And so then they have the decision to make, do you sign with South Alabama in December or hope you get a Mississippi State offer in January? And I think that you look around the country, a lot of those 2- and 3-star kids are unsigned right now because they were sort of in limbo, and now things are starting to shake out and classes are starting to fill out.
Barrett, it's always fun talking football with you. Of course, you can keep up with Barrett on Twitter at Barrett Salee, B-A-R-R-E-T-T-S-A-L-L-E-E. Not only a contributor and columnist with CBSSports.com, but also a co-host on ESPNU on SiriusXM Radio. Barrett, have a great rest of the week. Who do you have, by the way, New England or Philadelphia on Sunday?
Reluctantly the Patriots, but I hope they both lose.
I love it. Be good, Barrett. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks, Johnny.
Thank you.